Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I am your host, Ray Harkins, and thank you for joining us. This is episode number 17, and we are part of the Punk News Podcast Network. Visit punknews.org. And you can check out all the latest and greatest with your favorite bands, music reviews, show reviews, and there's also a ton of shit-talking as well. And you can look for that in the comments section over any news post. There will be conversations that are not even related to the news that gets posted in the first place, which I kind of find funny. It's usually even like the first post. Someone's just asking, hey, did you watch the latest episode of Breaking Bad? And it's like, isn't there like a message board to do that with? But regardless, punknews.org, and we're happy to be a part of it. Let's get some other business out of the way first, then we'll dive in. Follow us on Twitter at 100 Words Podcast. And more exciting than anything else, Finally, figured out what to do with the website. Go to 100wordspodcast.com, and if you are a Tumblr user, you can follow us there. Some of you have wrote in and really enjoyed what the previous podcast that I did with some friends called First World Problems. What we did with that, a little segment called Quick Hits, where basically we recommended either music, movies, or food, pencils, whatever. So some of you were requesting that kind of come back. So that is coming back. That's actually something that I've started to do. I started posting recommendations on the site, just little things that either I'm listening to or checking out or whatever the case may be. Eventually, I'll start to bring in some guest contributors from that perspective. So yes, follow the website, 100wordspodcast.com. And I also would encourage you to rate the show if you have been listening to it, because I'm not going to lie, download numbers are pretty great. They're actually pretty impressive. When I log in and look at them, I said, wow, that many people decided to download the Tommy Rogers podcast, which, by the way, episode number 14, most popular podcast I've ever done in my entire life. So there's a lot of people that check that out. Anyways, rate the show. You can either click 5 stars, 4 stars, 3 stars, whatever the case may be. It just makes us look cooler in iTunes. And if you don't like listening on iTunes, that website that I referenced you, I post a little flash player and people can check it out that way. and they don't even have to worry about downloading stuff. They can just listen to it right there. When I post this episode, I will be in Hawaii for one of my annual vacations with my family, and I'm pretty stoked. So when you are listening to this, I may or may not be flying and or on a beach or sleeping or doing something in a tropical location. So that's the beauty of time travel and travel on airplanes and all those other things. So anyways, I also would like to mention something else that I have been consuming recently, a zine called Rump Shaker Fanzine. For those of you that are too young to remember, a lot of the punk, hardcore, independent music community used to actually publish magazines. And when I say magazines, I mean something, you know, not like your Entertainment Weekly or Time, but similar in fashion as far as it looks like a magazine, but it's all independently published, either through Kinko's or some random printing press. Needless to say, Rump Shaker Fanzine, this is the sixth issue. It's one of the best zines out there, plain and simple. There are not many that exist now, but this newest issue, which has been, I think, 10 years in the making, he has a lot of different interviews with people like Mike Judge from the band Judge, Ceremony, Fucked Up, trying to think of what else. There's just a lot of cool stuff. And my own personal favorite thing is he actually sits down with people that are sort of luminaries within the scene, so to speak, and their mothers. So like in this issue, he interviews Walter Schreifels from Quicksand Rival Schools and his mom. And he sits down with Dan Yemen from Lifetime, Kid Dynamite, Painted Black, and his mom. And it just provides an insight that people just aren't able to see ever, because you view a person through however you're consuming their music or you've met them at a show or whatever. But, you know, our parents know us in a completely different light. And it's always interesting to kind of see that. And that's kind of why I always ask questions within the podcast about, you know, these our guests and their relation to their family, just because you can see so much of why a person does what they do based on their familial relations. So anyways, rumpshakerfanzine.com. I think that's the website. If not, I apologize, but you can Google it, and you'll be able to find it. I think it's like $10. I ordered it immediately and it was an amazing $10. It's super thick too. I think like 160 some odd pages. So check it out, enjoy it, and let me know what you think of it. Anyways, my guest this week is Chris Hansen, the owner, CEO, slash badass of No Sleep Records. I've known Chris for a long time, and full disclosure, I actually helped Chris professionally with some financial stuff, but this is not a cheap plug for his record label. Like I said, I've known Chris for quite some time. He'll take you through his career moves when we talk about the interview, or when I talk to him in the interview. But he's just he's definitely one of my closer friends now, and I was really excited to sit down and like have this open and honest conversation. I'm not going to lie, this is definitely the most in-depth I've gotten with a guest as far as their own trials and tribulations and kind of how they've grown as a person, just because I've known Chris for so long. So it was easier for me to make my own observations and kind of be able to have him open up about those observations. So yeah, but No Sleep Records is an amazing independent record label. They actually provide the music for our intro, that band Balance and Composure, the music that you hear at the beginning and the ending of the podcast. That is that band. And they also put out records from the Wonder Years and La Dispute and Aficionado, and yeah, nosleeprecords.com, and you can find out all the information you possibly can. But it's really hard to have an independent record label these days because clearly the music industry has changed a lot. And so the fact that he's been able to make this successful over the past, especially over the past 2 to 3 years, is, you know, kind of flaunting in the face of how other record labels are shrinking and downsizing, and he just kind of continues to grow. So anyways, open and honest conversation. I was really excited to do this, and I went over to his apartment, and we started talking about all of this fun stuff. So here it is. Hope you enjoy. I'm not going to lie. I've been thinking about obviously doing this for a while with you, because obviously I see you quite often. But I was excited to do this because I think that, not only do you have a lot of different experiences within the music industry that obviously you can share to people, but you don't fit a certain mold within independent music as far as whether it's like your own beliefs. You're not the typical dude. In a good way, in my opinion. So that's why I was always excited to be like, Chris will be perfect for this.
Well, release a LP of this recording.
Yeah, this could be the Chris Hansen spoken word,
yeah.
Quadruple 12 inch. This will be like a 4-hour interview.
Yeah, that works for me. And we'll have us gonna do some remixes of everything.
That makes sense to me.
And we're basically gonna make a 10 LP.
Okay, then we can do some dubstep remixes.
Yeah.
Awesome. But you were born and raised essentially in Southern California, right?
Yeah, I was born in Fountain Valley.
Okay.
Then grew up.
Yeah. So did your parents, like, you lived in Fountain Valley? That's where they happened.
Yeah, I was just born at the Fountain Valley General Hospital or whatever, off of Warner.
Do they have a plaque above the room where you were born?
Oh, of course.
Right. You bought that for them?
Yeah. I bought it from them. Like, hey, you don't know who I am.
Yeah.
So here's a plaque.
Little do you know.
I don't know which room I was born in, but just put it above one room and say it's
yeah, probably. Exactly.
Yeah. Nice plaque.
Right.
It's better than the PETA one.
that
one doesn't exist.
No, that one doesn't exist.
I knew it.
So you were, you're born and formed in Fountain Valley, but then your parents lived in Huntington, so that's essentially, you view your formative years as growing up in Huntington.
Yeah. Yeah, I was born in Fountain Valley, we lived in Huntington. Grew up on Normandy Lane.
Normandy Lane?
Normandy Lane.
Okay.
Over by St. Bonaventure.
So then what would your porn name be? You have to do your...
porn name?
Yeah, your middle name and the street you were born on.
William Normandy.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I always love my... Mine is Edward Giverny.
Edward Giverny.
That's where I lived most of my life. Yeah. It's like a French porn
William
star.
William Normandy.
That's pretty good. I think that there's probably a porn star that already exists with that name.
Well, he's going to die. That's my name.
William
Normandy.
And so what did your parents do, like, job-wise?
My mom, she did what I was, well, she worked
I mean, not like, not like when you were born, but just like, you know, yeah. your memories as you were kind of, you know.
My dad, like, he, office, well, not office manager, like, accountant / manager / whatever of, like, savings loan, and then when that went out, and then
he was a working professional.
Yeah, he's a working professional.
Got it.
He was a working professional. And my mom was office manager.
Sure, sure.
Somewhat accounting as well.
Yeah, yeah. And how long did they? Because you are an only child.
Yeah.
How long were they married before they had you? I know it's tough to remember. Like, they wanted to have kids. You weren't like, here's a surprise.
Well, they found each other late in life.
Sure.
As well. So they were like, they're fairly older.
Right.
Already. Like as a kid, my dad, people thought he was my grandpa and stuff. Honestly, they're married probably like 5 years, maybe longer than that.
Sure. But they obviously, since
probably
they were.
Than actually maybe 10.
Right.
I don't really know exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but yeah, since like you said, since they, I didn't know that they found each other later in life. Mm-hmm. Like, had they previously been married before?
No.
Okay.
Neither had been married.
And so, well, that's pretty romantic that they would.
My dad was a little bit of a ladies' man.
Oh yeah.
For a while,
he didn't peg himself down to anybody.
No. Nope. One of my favorite stories my mom always tell me. Well, uh-huh. My dad said it too, but my mom mentioned it recently. After they got married, they were at like his place. That's where they lived, and then some like girl called on the phone, like asking for him. Like, mom's like, "No, this is his wife." Yada yada.
Step off, bitch. That's funny. But you know, like, you never experienced, your dad would just tell you stories about that. Like, there wouldn't be too much like real life experience where you were just like, oh wow, like, my dad was kind of a player.
Yeah, no, I mean, he wasn't like really, but yeah, just like, he had a lot of girlfriends.
Sure, sure.
Like, I remember my mom told me something about it. He had like, one time he had like, I think it was 3 girlfriends or something.
Just juggling.
Yeah, he was just juggling.
I find like
the ladies.
We have a lot of similar experiences because my dad was totally the same way. Like he would such a distinct memory, but I think I was like maybe 10 or 11 and he would, because my parents were divorced, it was like 4. And so I would always go back to Las Vegas where he lived. And so I'd stay with him for like 2 or 3 weeks, but he would take me on dates. And it was like, thinking about it now, it's like, dude, that is so fucked up. He would take me on like an afternoon date. We'd go like mini golfing with some woman. And then we'd go to dinner with a different woman.
So he was totally using you as like, look at this cute kid.
100%. I was just like this, like, oh, if you're okay with my kid, then like, you know, maybe I can sleep with you later on. Like it was just, and then I would confuse the women's names. Like my dad would be prepping me in the car. He'd be like, we're going out with
Jane, but
totally. And then like, but in the evening we're going out with Jackie. So he'd like prep me. And I was just like, yeah, it's like thinking back on it, like, fuck was he doing? Like, that's a terrible idea. Yeah, but so yeah, your dad wasn't as bad as that. Oh, like, and obviously, yeah, like they were married, so there was no.
Yeah, and then like eventually, yeah, they eventually found each other later in life. And
got it. Did that
magic from there on?
Would it, because your father was older and people noticed that? Like, did that? Were you like defensive about that? Were you just like,
yeah, it was definitely like, I mean, being a kid, you're like.
That's true. You're defensive about everything.
Fuck you, blah, blah. You're defensive about everything, and you're like, yeah. So it was definitely a sore subject at times because it was also kind of like weird because everyone like had younger parents and all that. So it was like, people like, I was asked if like my grandparents stuff. I'm like, no, it's my parents. So it definitely got annoying.
Right, and that was probably like in elementary school, I'm guessing. Yeah, when you were.
Yeah, because eventually kids, they're still stupid, right, but they're less stupid.
Right.
But they're always stupid.
That's very true.
Forever stupid.
And so, but your home life was essentially like pretty stable. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was a happy marriage and everything was working out well with that.
Good marriage, everything's good. Mm-hmm. Grew up in Huntington.
Right.
Had a dog. Had basically a farm.
Had a farm?
We had like my dad loved animals.
Uh-huh.
Like we had an aviary in the backyard full of birds. We had like a room in the house that was just full of birds.
Really?
We had a toucan.
Holy shit, I had no idea.
We had like one of the huge parrots that can like bite a broomstick in half.
Right.
And I was just like a little kid. And we had like a pen with like rabbits in the back.
And interesting. And this was just like,
we
this...
had like my dog grew up with Tara, which is like a Lassie kind of dog.
Uh-huh, sure. So this was just because your dad was so down for animals. Yeah,
you just love animals. We also had, I remember, like, I don't really remember it, but right, when I was younger, we had a chicken.
Wow.
I guess we had a rooster, too, when people were complaining.
Right.
In the morning. So
people were like, hey, so 4 in the morning rolls around. This thing's yelling at us.
I guess people hide in some beach, you know, they're not.
Yeah. Well, that's not typically what you'd find in, like, a suburban home.
Yeah. It was literally just, like, a normal house in Huntington. Back here, we had so many animals.
Interesting. So, do you think that kind of obviously got you started off on the right foot as far as like having an awareness for animals in general and kind of informed your philosophically in the future?
Yeah, I'm sure like growing up around a lot of animals and like my dad, I mean, like he loved going to zoos and everything too.
Mm-hmm.
More like a lot of animal park and stuff.
Sure, sure.
Like open
conservatories, right?
Yeah,
right,
so we like go to those a lot as a kid too. So it was like grew up around like all kinds of animals. So it's, I think that helped with my love for animals.
Sure.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Yeah, it's always cool to when you can trace that back to the values actually placed like by the parents, where it's like, yeah. Sometimes it's like, you know, kid just finds it on his own or whatever, but it's nice to be able to be like, oh, this is like a generational thing.
Yeah,
not like your dad was, you know, raw vegan or anything like that, but
I mean, my dad definitely wasn't vegan or straight edge.
Yeah.
That, but he loved animals all the same.
Sure. Yeah, but that's still
like eating meat as well.
Oh, of course, yeah. But that, I mean, that's part and parcel for that generation.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then, so yeah, as you started to, I mean, you know, talking about your dad, I mean, we've obviously both experienced the same loss as our father passing away. I mean, yours was much earlier than mine. So how old were you when?
16.
Okay.
Yeah, 16.
Yeah, and my dad passed away when I was 20. Like 27. Yeah,
I was senior in high school.
Okay. And so for some reason I thought that he passed away earlier in your life, but so you had already kind of, you know, really started to experience like high school and
I mean, I was a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm. What school did you go to?
Marina.
You went to Marina.
Yeah. Vikings.
Right. And so what was your high school experience? Like, did you
sucked.
Hated it? Yeah, the sort of typical.
Yeah, I mean, I was a lot shorter and fat, and people make fun of me all the time. I got ditched in my senior prom, yada yada. So like, you know,
wait, you said you ditched your senior prom?
No, I got ditched.
Really? So like you went there?
I went there with someone,
and then
she ditched me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, fuck her.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. What's her first name? We don't need to out her last name.
Janelle.
Fuck you, Janelle.
I don't know her last name.
It's okay. Yeah.
But she ditched me, and then being the gullible, stupid, like fat kid I was like. She found me afterwards. Oh, I was looking for you all night. And I'm like, no, you weren't. But then I still just drove her home.
Right. But you're like, okay. Well, you're just a nice guy. You're not a sucker.
But she got hers, so. She did.
Okay.
Like 5 years later, my old friend Nick told me that she saw me at a grocery store and I didn't recognize her. I just walked past her. And
burn.
She got like super big. She has like 5 kids or something. This
sure.
was like 6 years ago now.
Sure. Yeah. There you go.
Whatever.
Living well is the best revenge, they say.
Exactly.
So throughout high school, you know, when did you start to kind of discover like independent music, and then how did your high school experience kind of like form around that? Like, did you get into music at all in high
school? Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was definitely like, I was later coming into things just because like I had friends, but I was definitely a loner for the most part. Like,
uh-huh.
Like at school, I had groups, people I like go between or whatever, but I didn't really like.
Right. What groups were you going between? Like, were you going between like the nerd comic kinds. Book kids and
nerds, skateboarders?
Okay.
Sometimes some popular people, and then like
sure.
Metal kids,
okay.
Punk kids. I mean, I was.
You were a friendly. Floater.
I was definitely a floater.
Okay.
But like, the people I grew up with, hang out, were more like metalheads, yada yada.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as a kid, I hated metal for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I still hate like Metallica and shit metal like that. That they all liked.
Sure, sure. That's just never something you were exposed to that yeah. you enjoyed.
But so I was definitely like later coming around to it, like. Like, my first cassette was R.E.M. Monster.
Okay.
My first CD was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Those are both early 90s.
And then my, like, childhood shirt I would always wear was a Depeche Mode shirt that I got as a hand-me-down from my cousin.
Oh, nice.
It's like, and I was like, ooh, I wonder who this is. So I listened to it, and I listened to Depeche Mode a lot. Yeah.
Was music important to your parents at all? Like, did they kind of...
Yeah, like, okay. My parents always listened to music, like... I grew up listening to a lot of, like, oldies. My dad, like, loved, like, Hairth and
oh, okay.
all that. So I grew up listening to a lot of oldies, and then my mom loved Elvis and, like, country. And
got it.
And I can't stand most country.
Right.
It's pop country.
Sure.
T-Swift. But, so, I mean, I grew up, like, around good music, at least. It was just, like, I didn't find out about, like, a lot of bands or, like
independent music. Or, yeah, right, right. What was your gateway into that? Like, was it a friend that started to go to shows and it was kind of like, oh, that's
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, like, it was either my, like, junior or senior of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I, like, knew, like, independent music, but it was, like, the bands that I, like, broke, kind of.
Like, Green Day and Rancid.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
I mean, I grew up listening to, like, Green Day, Blink, like, I mean, that was in, like, elementary school, like,
sure.
all those things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there was, like, punk, whatever stuff I was listening to, but it wasn't, like, the indie side of it.
Right.
But I mean, also, like, in the 90s, internet isn't how it was or anything. So
of course.
It's like, unless you, like, had a lot of friends and you were,
yeah.
like, going to shows, you didn't know of any bands really.
Totally. Like,
as
that,
much, you know?
People's usually entry points are usually, like, an older sibling or, like, a classmate
yeah.
that is
able yeah, to. And I was only child.
Mm-hmm.
I, like, hung out as a kid playing with action figures and
yeah, yeah.
comics and eating way too much food.
Right. Nothing wrong with any of those.
I know.
Especially when you're a kid.
Exactly. So, I mean, it was definitely, like, I forget what year in high school, but I started hanging out with, like, a few people that were, like, they're in a band, yada yada. So it was, like, I gradually got more and more, like, it was mm-hmm. probably not my senior, it was probably more, like, my sophomore and junior year now that I think about
uh-huh.
it, like, and gradually more and more. But I think my first show was Under In Law.
Oh, that's a good one.
With... Messed.
Oh,
and
nice.
Surgical.
It's good. Was that like House of Blues or something like that?
Yeah, House of Blues. Huh?
Yeah.
But I think that was like my first show because the people I was like hanging out with at the time, they're obsessed with Under In Law.
Uh huh.
So, like, obsessed.
Right. So you're like, yeah, I'll go with you guys.
Yeah. But I think that was like my first show.
Got it. What? And so you said that your friends in high school were playing in a band, and so like were they playing like Chain Reaction and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I mean
okay.
they were playing Chain, like Hoagie Barnacles, like that. So I mean, I went to like
sure.
a lot of those places. I knew of like throughout high school, I knew like local bands. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. They're, like, I mean, I knew like of music, independent
right,
music,
right, right.
Wasn't like into it
right.
as much.
Well, what were you primarily into? I mean, I'm presuming you weren't playing sports in high school.
No.
Like, so what were you know, like were you? By all definitions of the term, would you call yourself like an indoor kid? Where you're like, yeah, I like to
homebody, like
play video games,
loner, geek, whatever. I play video games, like play toys. Still, probably well, not in high school, obviously.
That's okay. No judgment.
Well, not
if
like
you did.
My action figures,
right? They'd
but,
be on display,
yeah,
like an adult
display.
Does.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm doing it now in that room,
right?
But you know, I would like play video games.
Mm.
Watch movies, watch TV.
Sure,
be
sure.
A complete loner.
Yeah,
but occasionally hang out with people.
Sure, sure. Okay, I see. So then, towards
drink
your
coffee.
Drink coffee. All like, what was your first experience with coffee?
13 years old is when I started going to Starbucks.
Really?
Yeah.
And you just immediately dove into coffee?
I dove into coffee.
That's insane.
Grew up in coffee.
Wow. Okay.
Imagine how tall I'd be if I...
You'd be... 6'3", so... No. You would be like at least 6'7".
I should have never gotten coffee.
Yeah. Just keep... Well, I'd really like to do... I mean, obviously, I'm sure there's a study out there as to what age... Is caffeine allowed where it's like it's not stunning your growth?
Yeah.
But that would be interesting to see if you didn't drink coffee, how tall you'd be.
I know.
But it wouldn't matter because you wouldn't play sports, so it's not like it would be advantageous.
I would just hit my head on a lot.
You'd have low clearance on a lot of stuff.
That's for sure.
And so then, like you going back to your father passing away your senior year, what did he pass away from?
A heart attack.
Okay.
I grew up like he had a lot of like heart attacks throughout like his, the first one I think was in like early 90s when I was a kid. He had a heart attack.
So yeah, like bypass surgery.
Yeah,
or anything?
Like in front of me and my mom, he had I forget which surgery it was, but it was he was dead for a little bit, like on the hospital and everything. Then he got through that, and then he had a couple more like heart attacks. Then he had a blood clot in his brain at one point.
We were
driving home. From somewhere, and then all of a sudden my dad just like started like dozing off as he was driving,
right?
And then like I mean I was like a kid, so I couldn't like drive or anything,
right?
So,
right.
Like pull over, I call my mom, I was like something's wrong, blah blah. And then so my mom worked with, so I came with my mom to like drive the car. And then like we got like with my mom, and then went to the hospital. They at first didn't find anything, then they eventually found like a blood clot in his brain.
Yeah.
And then he got through that.
Uh-huh.
But and then in 2001, he at work, like he would go to work early and then leave early. And he would like take naps before he left, because he would like go to work at like 4 a.m. or something.
Sure.
So he would take a nap before he like drove home in traffic and stuff. Or light traffic.
Right.
And then he just like passed away like in his sleep while he was taking a nap. So
like at work?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like the shared like secretary for the office, like. So yeah, it's off quiet, and she went in and found him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, there's bad hearts in the family.
Right.
He died of it. My grandpa did. My uncle almost did.
This already.
Yeah, I mean,
it's in the family, so it wasn't like it wasn't shocking. Well, obviously, it wasn't shocking because your father had experienced it.
Yeah.
So many times before.
Like, I was 16 when he passed, but then I like started experiencing like. It happening though, like as definitely a lot younger, because I mean it was like in the early 90s when you first had a heart attack.
I'm sure that, I mean, like, did that scare the absolute shit out of you when it first happened?
It happened in front of like me and my mom. Like he was standing and he had a heart attack and he fell.
Yeah.
And he clobbered his head on the wall, like made a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
Made a hole in the wall for like a while. So it was like, but yeah. So I mean, that was like, I was just like sitting outside and crying like on the curb, like asking my dad like when we went in at him and stuff.
Right. That's insane. Yeah. So you like, yeah, you experienced that trauma, and I'm sure it was one of those things where it was like, did it become, because it happened so often, like, did it become normal in a way where you were just, I mean, it was always, I'm sure, traumatizing.
But, yes and no. I mean, I kind of got like immune to it somewhat, but not really. Like, I mean, all of that like fucked me up on many levels for sure. But it definitely never became normal. Like I.
Right, yeah, it wasn't like, oh, okay, cool, stuff. Yeah, cool, gotta go to the hospital again.
It was always, like, torture.
Of course.
I mean, it was probably, like, helped a little, like, each time. Or, like,
right.
Started having it earlier.
Or maybe not so much, like, helped, but it was from the standpoint where it's, like, you at least knew how to react.
Yeah.
Like, you knew what to do. Right.
It definitely helped with, like, just understanding, like, not, like... completely like freaking out, and then it helped, I mean it helped me dealing with that younger when my mom was in the hospital,
right?
Well, when she had like, they thought it was a seizure, but then it ended up, or they thought it was a stroke, then it ended up being seizures or something,
right?
So like, it helped me like
know how to deal with,
especially
that.
Since I mean it was like just me, there's people from my mom's old work that came in and stuff, you know, like,
right?
So it helped me with like dealing with that, like,
sure.
But I mean, nothing can teach you for like,
no,
be in a hospital while your only parent is like in a hospital bed, like,
totally, yeah, it's brutal.
Not really completely coherent and all that stuff, so
for sure. Yeah, well, that's obviously why, you know, I mean, from what I've observed in your life, that's obviously like why family is like so important to you, and like the people that you care about, it's like, you know, you want to keep them close and do what you can to potentially help them, you know.
Yeah.
And so as as all that stuff was happening to you, and you know, like, did you did you find solace in anything as you were kind of going through that, you know, tremendous loss, like your senior year? Like, did you find yourself diving into certain things?
Yeah, it definitely got me to. That was probably like what helped me get into music and various things more, just because it was like something
you're able to pour yourself. Sure, sure.
Like I after my dad died, I took like a couple months off school, just because it was like,
yeah,
I didn't want to deal with like people asking like, "Are you okay?" all that shit.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Just too much, and plus also I was like traumatized from it.
Of course, sure. Right, right.
But I think that I definitely just started to try to get into something that I enjoyed.
Right, like pour yourself into it. Sure,
trying to like block away at all, you know, as bad as that is. But
yeah, well, you have to learn how to cope with something like that, and it's like it's not easy when you're that young and you don't, you know, you're still finding your identity yourself, and then to have that, and it's just like, oh, okay, what am I supposed to do here? But yeah. So then, yeah, like as you started to kind of dive more into it, like, you know, did you, I presume that you didn't like school from like a school perspective as well, like your grades were amazing, I'm sure.
That was horrible.
A pluses.
I graduated on technicality.
Really? Oh, I think you told me about that before.
Yeah,
but what was
stupid
that?
Stupid singles living teacher. Like
singles, is that like home ec?
Yeah, it's basically home ec.
I've never even heard of singles living.
Learn how to sew, cook,
that's
how
amazing.
To manage your bills. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay.
Like, I wasn't good in the class, but it was, like, so I took 3 months off because my dad died.
Sure.
All the teachers, like, said, don't worry about the stuff you missed. It'll be fine.
Right.
Like
they, I'm sure they would send, like, homework home or something for you to kind of, like, keep up.
And they were, like, any of the tests I missed, whatever, they're like, don't worry about them.
Right.
So they, like, held me aware with that. But then my singles living teacher, she decided to be a bitch and decided to fail me.
Okay.
And because I was failing or going to fail at class,
you weren't getting
wasn't
enough
gonna
credits.
Graduate.
Sure.
But she didn't send home a possible failing notice. So fuck that bitch. I graduated. But then I ended up getting cussed out by my English teacher,
okay.
Mr. Dodd, because he heard about like
graduated on a technicality. Yeah,
and so
yeah.
Like when he was like signing my paper, like being like free to not like do the last like classes or whatever, you know?
Right.
He cussed me out.
Got it.
But. Yeah, I wasn't a very good student. Like,
right.
I mean, I'm not stupid. I just
you didn't care.
Really care, and right. Then also like, I'm not like very good at handling like homework and all that. Like, I was definitely not very.
You weren't driven from that perspective.
Yeah, I wasn't driven. Like,
and did you have like I presume because of that you had no like burning ambitions to be like, God, I can't wait to graduate college.
Yeah,
I can't
I
wait
mean,
to go.
It was like. I knew I wasn't going to be able to get into good school, and so I was like, I'll take my placement test.
Yeah.
Like, my, like, I was really good at math. I never did the homework, but I did do it on the test. Like,
sure.
I knew math.
Right.
Now I don't know shit, but, like, I was in, like, pre-calc or trig or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Whichever one was better.
Sure.
And then, like, I could have taken another one, but I took a break. I just didn't want to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took placement tests, and I'm horrible at, like, tests like that, where it's, like,
You're probably horrible at the anxiety for a test as well,
yeah,
I'm sure.
The anxiety and like all that stuff. So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I got put in like math one or something like super, super simple.
Mm-hmm.
So like I went to Golden West for like a week and I was like, all right, this is all way too easy because that was like how it was for all the classes. Cause,
mm-hmm.
Like I was getting English good in like a lot of the classes. But,
right.
Like, I just like didn't.
You were able to get by without putting that much effort into
yeah.
it. Right.
Like I was getting C's, whatever.
Yeah. Which
not
was fine with
work,
you. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really care.
Yeah.
Like, I want to just get out and then go home.
Sure.
Watch cartoons.
Right, right.
Read comics.
Sure, sure.
Whatever. So, like,
We were just talking about you, like, your desires
right.
into going
so
to school.
So, I was, like, when I was at school, I was like, all right, this is all way too easy. I'll just do homework and
yeah,
come on
yeah.
days to do.
Sure.
And then you not go ever.
Right.
But then it led to, like, a week later, like, yeah, fuck this. I'm just not going to do this.
Right, right. So what was your first job? Like, did you?
Well, technically, my first job, I worked at going to swap meet.
Oh, okay.
Guitars. I was taking guitar lessons. This guy Eddie, that had a shop like by my mom's old work.
Okay.
And him and his now ex-wife did like a swap meet booth selling guitars and like old
mm-hmm.
Disney movies and like random shit, you know, like that. So I started working there like at like 12 or 13, I think. Starting that. And then I also, like, on summers, I would, like, help in my dad's work.
Oh, okay.
So my dad eventually worked at, like, some manufacturing company. He was, like, one of the bosses. And
he was able to get you some summer work. Like, data entry and stuff like that.
Yeah, data entry. It's like, I'm a kid. They don't care.
Yeah, of course. I can do that. Yeah, anybody can do that.
And I'd, like, make money doing that. So I
got it.
I grew up, like, working also. So that's another thing I did with my time. I work.
Right, right.
Like, since I was young, I've always wanted to work for the most part, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, do something with myself. Otherwise, I'll just sit there and hate my life.
Right.
So, I, like, grew up doing that, and then...
So, as you were kind of transitioning out of high school and into, you know, when you're supposed to go to college, and you knew quickly that that wasn't something you were interested in.
Yeah, I worked at Heinz Surf and Sport. Never surfed once in my life, so it was... Sure. Worked there for a little bit, and then I just, like, stopped going. Like, I did with all my jobs. So I had too much anxiety. You'd be like, oh, I'm quitting. I would just, like, stop
going. Oh, so you would just straight up stop.
Yeah, I would stop going. But then, like...
You're like, I don't need this for a reference.
Yeah, and then I got called, like, 2 months later from, like, one of the employees. And be like, hey, can you cover my shift? I'm like, I don't work there anymore. And, like, I guess they're still scheduling me, like, months after. Which is weird.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a total glitch in the paperwork as well. Yeah.
They're literally like scheduling me for like weeks after or months after, because it was literally like a couple months after when like I forget his name, but like one of them called asking like cover the shit.
Sure,
like,
sure.
I don't work there anymore. Like you're still on the schedule. Like
I haven't worked there.
In like months.
I quit in my own mind. Did you guys not get that?
Yeah, that's what I did for all my jobs. Like
okay,
that's just what I did.
Right.
When I was a kid.
And so when do you? Because I mean, I first met you when you worked at Revelation.
Yeah,
like that was your.
Yeah, like, I worked at there. I worked at Long Drugs. I worked at a place I won't say. And then and then up until my dad died, we had like a swap meet booth too. Like we were,
oh okay.
Me and my dad was also at swap meet too. And then after HSS, then I worked at
was that in high school that you or like see or
that was like I graduated.
Okay.
I was working over the summer. It was like a seasonal job. I was working outside like the sale and then I got hired. I was working inside. And then like I was like, I don't want to do this and I started interning at Fearless.
Okay.
And then that was when like Fearless and SmartPunk were the same company. So I started working at SmartPunk. Then I worked there for 2 years and then moved around a bunch as a nomad. Moved to Salt Lake City because someone from SmartPunk's moving there, so I was like, I'll go with. I was there for 6 months, moved back to California.
Okay.
Worked at Revelation since I knew them from SmartPunk days.
Got it.
Worked at Revelation for like 6 months. Then I moved to Kansas City for 6 months. Literally, it was like both years. It was, I lived Salt Lake City July to November or June to November, and then Kansas City June to November the next year.
That's funny.
And then the next year in June, I moved to Jersey to work Truscale's art director, and then
And so like
when, 2 years
when you first started to like obviously like enter the workforce and starting to like become more accustomed to like, because I mean essentially your first independent music job was like SmartPunk and Fearless. So like, well, you got the experience at Fearless and then that kind of transitioned
because like throughout high school like Fearless and labels Fearless, Fat, and stuff like that. Like, I guess I lied before. I got into music earlier, now I think about it. Because before high school, like, my favorite bands were like Big Wig, Tenfold, Third and Fall. So I was into like that side of the punk.
Okay.
And
how did you discover it? Because, like, those are random bands to, like, get into initially. Like,
yeah, literally my favorite bands were like Big Wig, Three Fall, Temple Pole, Lagwagon, yada yada.
Was it just like a sampler you got? No,
it was like samplers, and also my childhood friend Russell.
Okay.
He was like, those were like his favorite bands, and he showed
them
to me.
Got it. Okay.
So like, those were my favorite band.
Sure, sure.
So I was Fearless, Big Wig, yes.
Got it.
Three Fall, yada yada. It's like, because that was like the Fearless I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then like,
so that's where you're excited to be like, I want to intern.
Yeah,
I want to know more.
I like applied to intern there, and then he brought me on, and then I was interning there, and then they liked me, and I was a good worker, so they like we need someone else for SmartPunk. So that's when like SmartPunk was like first starting.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one guy there that ended up like, there's one guy and this guy Sean, and the other guy ended up like, I don't know if he quit or got fired. So then it was just me and Sean.
Uh-huh.
It was like the early days of SmartPunk.
Sure,
we did everything, and then just worked there for like 2 years.
Yeah. And so getting your taste with like kind of how that, because I mean, there's a lot of people that have an idea of like how the music industry works.
Yeah, like that, especially since that was the days when it was like Fearless and Smart Punk, like it was shared warehouse, shared offices and everything. So it's like, there was like stuff I would learn from the label side. And then also like from Smart Punk, I made a lot of connections, like built labels and like friends to this day and everything, which like every job I've had is because I worked Smart Punk. Because like, I was at Smart Punk, I was a buyer and various other things. So, like I dealt with labels and distribution people and all that stuff. So like that helped with like
all the future connections. Yeah. And so like the, cause yeah, like I said, people have a certain perception of how independent music, like how a job at a label works or whatever. Was your perception of that, like, you know, when you first started to work there, an intern, was this like, holy shit, like, this is how this works? Or is it like, oh, this is kind of what I expected? Or
I honestly had like no idea what to expect. when I was interning, I was literally like taking apart CDs, drilling holes.
In promos.
Taking apart like broken CDs, put them into new ones. The days of jewel cases, you know, there's like, it was really annoying. Shrink wrapping and cleaning, and then finding old at the drive-in vinyl sitting there and being like stoked.
And so, so then, as you started to transition into Smart Punk and obviously work there, you know, like, was that, because it was so small, was that really enjoyable for you to kind of, like, do, I mean, you obviously couldn't do whatever you wanted.
Yeah, it was cool, because it was, like, I mean, in ways I could, like, I mean, at first I was just doing orders, yada, yada, but then, like, I started doing buying and various other things, so it was, like, I could bring in, like, whatever I wanted for the most part. I mean, there was, like, stuff I had to bring in, but it was, like, because that's definitely, because I started having my path into, like, throughout high school into more and more, but then, like, you know, like working there, it was like, I finally, that was the start of me more so. Just because it was like, I got to be in that world. I, you know, like found out about so much more like bands and music and stuff. Like,
That's when like the layers started to peel away where you were just like, oh, like I feel home in a way.
It like opened it more to me. Cause it was like throughout high school, I got more like all kinds of stuff. You know, I got like Opeth, Jimmy World, and various like other bands, and obviously throughout that also like the Orange County hardcore bands like that, like some I used to hate, then I loved, then I hated again. All that, you know. I mean, it's definitely like high school gradually started getting to more, and then working there,
that was like, once you did that, it was like, it's over, like this is all like, what I care about.
So it was like every time we get new shipments in, we box of like new promos that they're working on. So, I had so many CDs. It was like, I mean, I'd go to Bionic. And well, throughout high school, I'd go to Bionic and buy like, go to the youth section and buy like 50 CDs at a time. Cause that's like just what I did at the time since I had no friends. I'd go to Bionic and buy CDs throughout high school and
just delve into stuff.
Just diving into CDs. It was like, oh, this looks cool. I'll buy it. I wouldn't trust that logic anymore.
No, not at all.
So, I mean, like in the 90s, early 2000s, it was a lot safer. With like,
well, you felt like you
quality.
You felt like,
especially
you could,
with like labels then.
Like, you could trust labels. It's like, oh yeah, this came out on Victory Records. This probably has to be good because they released quality stuff.
That was the day when like all those labels still had like their integrity and like put out music that they actually liked.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a
degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Right, right, right. Independent music in and of itself wasn't, it wasn't the proverbial quote-unquote cash cow that it could have turned into, where people entered the independent music culture to make money as opposed to the way that it was, where it's just like, oh, I'm here because I love this.
Yeah, this is all I know. This is all I want to do.
And so with all that traveling around and, you know, kind of like you said, you're just like a nomad and you were wandering, did you learn a lot from those experiences to where you were like, oh, like, I don't want to be traveling around. I want to be in one place. Or like, how did that kind of inform?
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of got like bored and so I just kept moving around. It was just like, I'd be bored. So I'd be like, oh, move to a different state.
Yeah.
Bored. I moved back to California.
Sure.
Bored. Oh, I moved to a different state again.
Right.
All that. I think it was like after my dad, I had a lot of like depression and like my anxiety like grew so much more too. So it was just like, when I wasn't comfortable, I would just like move to be comfortable for a second, and then I'd move back when I wasn't again.
Kind interesting. Of, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Try to just like,
it was a way to distract yourself in a way. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause you'd just like, so I'd keep like moving new places. So it was like the stress of being a new place and like having to do like all this stuff, you know, it was good at first, but then it just got like
tiring.
Yeah. But I literally like moved to a place and,
yeah, and then by the time that you had just, like, got everything out of boxes, you're like, yeah, so I think I'm going to go back.
Yeah, and then, like when I moved back from Salt Lake, I literally just, like I had a Mini Cooper at the time, and whatever, like, wouldn't fit in my car.
Yeah.
I just...
You took the swap meet.
No, I just left from the unit. I, like, threw away all my dirty dishes, just threw them in a bag, threw them in the trash.
You're like, there you go.
Left the couches inside, left my bed, which was a mattress on the ground. So I just lived in like a small studio apartment.
Right.
But I was bummed though, because IKEA used to have this awesome CD case, like sliding doors.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was this really cool CD case, and this is when I had
regret of that time
was my CD case.
Is leaving this awesome piece of furniture.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I had so many CDs. I had all the promos I'd get from Smart Funk.
Sure.
The endless amounts of money I'd spend at Bionic every week on new CDs that I didn't need.
Yeah, well, then you can obviously sell your old promos that you're not interested in. Yeah, and yeah, of course.
Yeah, I don't need this anymore.
It's a very vicious cycle.
Oh, I know.
And so then, I guess the longest job that you probably had besides Smart Punk was like working at Trustkill and like the art director.
Yeah, because I was at Smart Punk for like, is it a year or two? I can't remember. It was like 03 and 04, but I don't remember how much of each year.
Right, right.
It might have just been like a year, year and a half.
Sure.
So I was there. Then in Salt Lake, I just worked at Great Whale CD Exchange.
Oh, okay.
Worked there for like 5 or 6 months. Moved back. Worked at Red for 5 or 6 months.
Got it.
Moved to Kansas City. Didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Just like hung out. Did design. That was when I was like more trying to build my design side of things.
Sure.
And then
you're doing a lot of when did that come into play? Like as far as your interest in
when I was at Smart Punk, because I did, well, I mean, like throughout my life, I like drew, was into like I would like redraw comic book covers and like whatever else I guess I did.
Yeah.
And then when I was at Smart Punk, actually, that's when I was like, they had me do like cool shirt designs for bands and stuff. And then that's when I like started.
You're the design and your interest in technology kind of started to really
in the design side of things, definitely. Grew.
Right.
Like, I mean, as far as like nerd, like technology, like I grew up like building computers, like all my computers I built And like, cause my childhood friend Mike, like, we were both just like nerds. Like, we built PCs, yada yada.
That was exciting for you.
Which is funny because, like, as a kid, it was like, I knew anything about a PC and I could do whatever.
Yeah.
But then once I went to the dark side with Max, it was like, now I don't even know how to open internet on a PC whenever I'm on. It's like, how do you open
it? Like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
This is a useless box.
Exactly. But
so I see. So then, yeah, you were during the times where you were moving around, you were trying to cultivate your freelance stuff.
Like,
what did you call it initially? Like, what you were?
Barton Fink Designs.
Oh, okay.
Because the movie Barton Fink was one of my favorite movies. So I named it after that.
Okay.
And then I actually, when I was moving back from Salt Lake, I renamed it to No Sleep Studios.
Okay.
And then when I was in Kansas City, me and my then roommate friend Blake, we were talking about like starting a label. Because like throughout high school and then throughout like all the job and stuff, there's probably like four or five labels that I was like, all right, I'm going to do a label. But then like I had bands lined up and all this stuff. And like some of the bands went on to be like.
Yeah, very do very good. Well. Right.
And then some like didn't, obviously. But
sure.
So, I mean, I had, like, four or five labels that I wasn't going to do, but then, like, I didn't have money at all.
Of course.
So, I was, like, working in a warehouse.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it was, like...
You're like, I have to pay my rent before I put on a record.
So, I'm like, eh. So, they never got off the ground. Then, when I was in Kansas City, like, Star Labels, that's when No Sleep Records actually came into play.
Okay. In Kansas City.
Yeah, because I actually designed, like, the logo there, designed the first website.
Ah, got it.
Started working on, like, a compilation, which was going to be the first release. But then, like... We just never got around to it.
Sure.
And then when I was moving to Jersey for the job, I was stopping in Kansas City. I was getting lunch with my friend Rick. And he was like, I know you want to do a band or do a label. I have a new band. It's all recorded. Corvette Rose. 3-song EP.
Sure.
We're going to pay for the manufacturing, all that stuff. Do you want to put
your logo on it?
And then have your first release finally? I was like, fuck yes. And
you're like, that's easy enough.
Yeah. So then that came out October 2006. And then
got it. And so, not backtracking too far, but like, why? Because you mentioned that you played guitar and you were taking guitar lessons. Did you never feel the bite to be like, I want to be in bands?
I mean, there was like me and Garrett,
like
started like a million bands, but never actually did anything.
Oh, okay.
But it was also I wasn't very good at guitar. Like the bands I started, Garrett, I was gonna see.
Okay.
And like. I mean, you can ask Martin. I wasn't very good at guitar. Like, we were in musicianship together in school.
Oh, okay.
And I'd be the person like playing Green Day like during musicianship classes. That's all I could play.
Sure, sure.
And I stopped like the guitar path of things because like my wrists are so bad. They just like throb and hurt so bad all the time.
Got it.
So I was like, all right, I can't touch the musical instrument. Because I tried guitar and then I tried bass.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I couldn't.
It all hurt.
Yeah, much. So it's like, all right, I can't do this.
You're like, out of necessity, I will not be playing in bands.
Yeah, so it was like, then I was going to like seeing, like, there was a bunch of bands that like started theoretically with people.
Sure. The idea has started, but then.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, got it. Happened. Sure, sure. Yeah. With that happens all the time.
Yeah. One of the bands, we were just going to.
So yeah, what was like. The first band that you theoretically started in your own head and like had a name and like had a what you wanted to do with it.
I don't know the first, but one of them was with Garrett. We were going to start this band called Cuz the Monster Said So.
Cuz the Monster Said So. Okay.
I don't remember where the name came from, but it was going to be like a really like weird, like hateful, like grind,
okay,
kind of metal, like whatever band.
Sure.
Like we were all going to, I forget what. I mean, it was a gimmicky, like, whatever thing. Like,
yeah.
Like, I was going to wear Hulk hands for some reason.
The idea was so grand to start off with, and, like, there was no actual, like...
Yeah, I mean, we did one. Uh-huh. We did, like, an ambiance, like, thing.
Oh, sure.
And then, like, we were going to be, like, oh, we'll get kids in this. We'll, like, say it's, like, members of such and such, and we just, like, spelled the band names wrong kind of thing. So, like...
That's funny. Be, like, And for those of you listening, the Garrett that he's referencing is the warehouse manager at No Sleep Records currently. Because I sometimes forget that when we drop people's names, it's like, oh yes, we should include the listeners into this.
Martin is formerly a member of a band with Ray Harkins.
Yes, named Makoto. He played guitar. But that's that band name isn't terrible because usually what a common theme amongst a lot of these shows is like the people that play in bands usually reveal their first band name and like that's
I mean all of the band names I mean like all the you read the lyrics for them
okay
I mean, I used to post on there. I'll never post it again because it was some of the most like morbid, fucked up things you'll ever read
sure.
in your life.
That's incredible.
And then there was also another band I was going to start with, someone I worked at Smart Funk with, called Welcome to Dying.
Okay.
That one was going to be like a screamo, like Stacia kind of band.
Okay.
All the lyrics were just depressing about suicide. And
sure,
whatever.
Sure.
Just stupid.
Okay, and so then, hitting on Trustkill and obviously like your experience with that. You worked at Trustkill for how long?
2 years.
2 years, okay.
Yeah, or like just under 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Moved there in 06, moved back.
And I'm sure that was like an insane experience because it was like when you were working there, Trustkill was still doing really good business. Because
like, I mean, at SmartPoint, I learned various things from SmartPoint Fearless and that revelation. I started to learn like more label things and also distribution things since at the time, like Rev was still a label.
Right.
I mean, Rev was still a label, but you know what I
mean? Yeah.
They're like signing bands, putting out
records. Of course, they're active in that.
Yeah, they're active label. And then learned distribution side, working in the warehouse. And
sure.
Also, like, so I got my mail order backing from Smart Funk, doing orders there, warehouse, distribution, Rev/some mm-hmm. label. And then Trustkill was definitely a lot of like the majority of what I've learned, I think.
Sure.
I mean, I learned like a lot throughout them all, but Trustkill was because when I started at Trustkill was at its like highest.
Right. And there wasn't that many people working there.
Yeah. I mean, there was like six or seven?
Yeah.
There was like six or seven.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, for nowadays, that's a lot for a like an indie whatever label.
Sure, sure.
But I mean, because that was like 2006, things were like changing, but it, not as much, you know. Like,
right.
Labels were still thriving a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, and Trustkill was still doing really well based on their old back catalog,
like back catalog, and like all of their new releases from like it was like the last like album or two from bands, you know.
Right.
But I mean, like, because I got there, I think when Always a Hardwood. Always a Hard Way came out.
Okay.
There.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I forget what else came out, like, around then.
Sure,
was,
sure.
Like,
Hope's Fall was still doing pretty well.
Hope's Fall was doing good. Throwdown was doing good.
Right.
Bleeding Through was doing good.
Sure.
Wells Jericho was doing good.
Right.
They had, like, and Terror
a
was doing
lot
great,
of stuff going
stuff.
On,
so it was,
right,
like,
right.
It was definitely, like, the highest Trustkill was, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was when Trustkill was switching from Red to Fontana also, so it was, like, it was like a weird period when I first started because like nothing was coming out really just because it was like transition.
Switching distribution companies, yeah.
But it was the highest. And then obviously like then I saw the downfall of a lot of labels like while I was there. Including
mm-hmm.
like the downfall of like Trustkill.
Sure.
And Trustkill was around for a while after I left. But
of course, right. But it had changed so drastically from what kids had known like in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Where it was like, you mentioned Trustkill and Ferret, and I was just like, oh, well, those are the labels.
Yeah.
Like, those are the
exactly.
labels.
Especially, like, being in Orange County, because you're like, all the local bands are, like, on Trustkill, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And so then you were doing, obviously, No Sleep in conjunction with all the work that you were doing.
Like, No Sleep was, like, my hobby,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Yeah. You would moonlight.
Yeah. And then I used the connections I made from, like, the previous jobs and also at Trustkill to, like, keep it going.
Right.
Make new connections as of the Trustkill and all that.
Got it. And so, because I'm not going to focus too much on No Sleep, because obviously people can find out millions of interviews that speak about how No Sleep has started and all that type of stuff. But obviously No Sleep has developed to, you know, I mean, it's your full-time job. You're able to collect a paycheck from it. And that, you know, that's what people dream of.
Yeah.
And that's pretty impressive. And it's really changed drastically for you from that perspective in the past 2 to 3 years. You know, like, I mean, you could see that where it was going.
There was, you know, various like moments where it was like, wow, this just like came even more real. And then like that kept happening. Like every year there was a moment where it was like, it just kept going at a certain point, like getting so much bigger at a point. Where
right.
Like,
right. What was the first kind of push that you felt where it was like, you know, it took you like, even when you were maybe working at Trustkill, the first push with the label where you're just like, oh, like this could sustain itself as far as like, oh, the releases can kind of pay for one another and I'm not like paying out of my own pocket.
I mean, it was more so like various people were like, kept telling me that there could be something here. Yeah. I was, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's encouraging.
I definitely never like up until like, I actually was like receiving a paycheck.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, like even when I, after I got left Trustkill, I was living back out here
mm-hmm.
in like focusing on Yossi more. I was like doing design for the company at one point, and then I got Office for No Sleep, and then that's when I really like.
I remember when that happened, like, because I remember people, quote unquote, people were talking about. Was just like, oh, dude, like No Sleep got an office, and like they're, you know, Chris is really trying to take this somewhere. And I just remember how you know, people were really kind of like taken aback by that move, but it was just, I always thought it was really cool because it was like, that was you just making the step where it's like, okay, I'm taking this as serious as I possibly can.
It was a complete stupid move at the time when I got off. It was like, there was no money. There was, I owed like pressing plants, everyone money, but it was like, they're like,
wait a minute.
This is going to become a lot more real. I'm going to do this. I'm just going to, there was definitely like, even after the office and stuff, like a lot of like hard, I mean, it's still hard.
Yeah. Nothing's easy with independent
music. But it was, you know, there's a lot of like turning points. Like, I mean, when like,
yeah. So like, the early years, like what was the first kind of turning point that you felt where I was just like, oh, like all these encouraging words people are giving me.
Cause I had just started the label. I had like one offer for a distribution through a now defunct label / defunct distribution company partner. Where it was like, it was my first offer cause I was going to work for him for one of his also now defunct companies. But then it was like, I'm not going to work for you. I'm just going to move to, I don't know where I moved to then. But then stayed in touch. Then he was going to like, he wanted to just show me, and I was like, I'm looking at other options. Then I hit up Vic since I like worked around. I was like, I just started this label. It's literally nothing now, but I really want it to be something. I'm going to work like my ass off, yada, yada. And I was like, would Rev want to distro it? And then she responded, like, obviously, normally we take on like more like labels with releases because I literally had like nothing out at that point.
You're like, I got two things out.
I think it was literally like I had maybe two things out. Like, So she took a huge, like, helped me out massively because I was definitely like, awesome, I have distribution, I have like nothing out. Vic has helped me out a lot. Rev is, I love everyone there. It'll be perfect. Like, that was one of the things that helped me out a lot because it was like, I had a job, so I couldn't do like trying to get stores to pick up stuff.
And it, plus it validates the label in a way where it's like, you can go to bands and be like, we have distro through this. And it's like, oh, we can take more of a risk on you or whatever.
Like, I mean, some of the points were like, or like cool things were like when I was living in Jersey, wearing Trust still, like, I don't think they're around anymore, Wonka Vision magazine, when like they wanted to include me in like a label features, like it was like five features on one page or something, but I was like, oh, this is awesome.
This is an amazing piece of press.
It was No Sleep, He Who Corrupts, I forget who else. And it was just like, it was cool because it was like, someone's like recognizing it, you know? So like that was the, probably like the first, like, those are the first things. And then like when I was like recognition, like in the industry side of things, like when, like, well, like a stupid thing, like when like the Upsides was in Billboard, like in the Heat Seekers charts, like that was cool. It was like, oh, it's
But I mean, that's not stupid because that's like you, it wasn't, you know, your lifelong goal to be like, God, I can't wait to make it into Billboard. But because that happened,
it was just
like
a really cool thing. It's like,
it's great.
I never thought I'd see like No Sleep listen to Billboard. I mean, obviously, like if this was like even 10 years ago, the numbers for the things that we're doing, like, wouldn't be in Billboard, you know? But
still,
Those, it was that. And then like, when I got Office, that was a cool like moment. And when I got even better distribution and bands started doing really well. And then when we actually like got in the top 200,
and then when you when you bought the mansion that we're sitting in currently, like, I mean, that was,
I mean, you know, it was great living in my office for a year or two to save money and just paying for food.
You're like, this is literally the only thing I can afford.
I mean, it was cool when I was able to actually like move out of the office and live
Have a normal life outside of that.
And then again, like, get my own place where I can, like...
You can have an appropriate work-life balance.
Separation, where it's, like... Because living at the office, I mean, it saved money, and it was cool, but then it was also, like...
That shit gets old pretty quick.
It got really old, so it's, like, I woke up, I was at work. I mean, obviously, I wasn't supposed to be living there. And there was, like, a horrible bar next door. And the worst, like, clientele ever, and they'd be, like... The walls are so thin at the office, and music would be horrible and so loud. You'd hear Sublime at like 2 a.m. And I'm just like, I'm just trying to fucking sleep.
Yeah.
And then there'd be people smoking weed outside the door, kissing in the like plants in the front.
Sure.
It's definitely sometime I woke up to some guy was leaning against the glass and some girl was giving him head. There's just like, and like, I couldn't say anything because I'm not supposed to be sleeping or like living in an office.
So that's like amazing. You're like, there, like, all right, take this.
I'm definitely not supposed to be here, so I can't like stop any of these people from doing it. I can't like say anything. You can't scare them. And then like the bar will find out and then they'll be like, oh, I think someone's living there and they'll tell on me.
Right. You're like, I got to keep an extremely low profile. And so kind of in conclusion with everything, you know, the... Well, it's two parts of this. Like, one, you know, you, like, watching, being involved in independent music for, you know, a long period of time, like, for myself, and, like, watching people kind of, you know, like, essentially grow up, where it's just, like, you know, people, like, you mentioned Martin earlier, where it's just, like, I mean, I met him when he was, like, 14 years old.
Yeah.
And, like, watching people kind of develop and, like, grow into, you know, an adult in some way, shape, or form, whether or not that they still have all of their, you know, 15-year-old passions intact, like we both do. And it was just always interesting to see kind of, you know, like your journey and like how you grew up with, you know, a lot of, obviously, like you said, baggage coming into it, where it was like all this personal tragedy, it affected me.
But helped me to dive into it because I was like trying to
block
out real life. So I was just wanted to work, wanted to do what I like, because it's like, if I was new to this, I'd have no clue what I was doing, especially the moments I was like, all right, I'm going to get my neck tattooed. I'm going to get my hands tattooed.
Let me get my job stopper tattoos.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, now I really got to make this work.
Right.
I don't want to work at wherever.
Yeah, some insurance company or whatever the case may be.
And hide everything.
Right.
It's so hot.
Wear turtlenecks. And so, yeah, watching you develop and, like, watching you, like, you know, grow into the person that you are now, and obviously you're still growing, but, you know, like, the... Like, do you feel that that is directly related to the fact that, you know, you've experienced all that you've experienced, like, with the label? Like, you know, did the label kind of force you to grow up in a way?
Like, yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, I mean, I'm still, like, socially awkward and have anxiety, fucking, like, wazoo and, like, all these things. And yes, I said wazoo.
It's okay. But, and you also say yada yada, and it's incredible.
So, I mean, it definitely helped me to grow on many levels, because... Before I, like, started working for all these places and before I, like, started to no sleep and starting to, like, have to talk to a lot more people, I was definitely, like, I was a lot more closed off and a lot more, like, awkward and had a lot worse anxiety. Like, I mean, now I'm, like, I'm good in my own world.
Yeah.
It helped me grow to, like, to deal with life things.
Right. Step outside your comfort zone in a way. Yeah.
Everyone says I'm still in my bubble. I don't leave Orange County, but that's okay. I feel safe in Orange County.
Yeah, I think there's a huge difference between staying in like a geographical area and then breaking out of it from a mental standpoint. Yeah. So.
I mean, it definitely helped me like grow up a little. Like, I'm still like awkward and weird as can be and like have horrible anxiety about like everything. Like, I don't like going to new places by myself or anything like that. Like, I won't do it.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely a lot better off and a lot easier to talk to people.
Yeah.
It's easier, and I've been able to handle life situations a lot, I think, from it too. You
know? Sure.
I mean, I know even since I've known you, I've like, you know, it's, I think definitely surrounding yourself in something and being a part of something you like and putting all of into it helps you like grow up as a person too and like, you know, mature on many levels.
Yeah, professionally, personally, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, for sure. Well, I hope you enjoyed this in some way, shape, or form.
It's good.
Good. You were good. You revealed stuff. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.